The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
All right, everybody, welcome or welcome back. It is our third and final hour today on this chilly, sunny, beautiful Thursday, North Texas winter day. It is the 26th day of January. We are glad you are here. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, a little less than 30 minutes from now, the chairman of the Texas Republican Party, Matt Rinaldi, will join us from California. What's Matt doing out in Cali? He is there for the vote, which takes place tomorrow, to figure out who needs to be the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. Will it be the incumbent Ronna McDaniel, or will the Harmeet Dillon challenge be successful? Matt is on board for Harmeet. We will ask him why. Right now, though, let's have a chat with the gentleman we have welcomed before. He is Brandon Showalter, journalist, podcaster with the Christian Post. And he's not a one-trick pony with gender issues, but few people have talked about it with the depth and familiarity that he has. And so we'll talk about that and maybe a couple of other things on his beat there at the Christian Post. Brandon Showalter, welcome back, sir. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. So good to be with you again.
Nice to have you. The occasion here is a film. There are a million ways to go to the movies these days. You can actually walk into an actual theater. You can stream stuff off Netflix. But some folks who are trying to engage in persuasion and just get their points out are doing things through Vimeo and things with a paywall where you can drop down a couple of bucks. I mean, we do it at Salem Now. I mean, we've got our own company connection with this where filmmakers make money by with streaming services. So the film in question here is a thing called Dead Name, and it's a portrait of parents who are in this quandary that we've talked about all the time. Their 9-year-old boy says, "Hey, I think I'm a girl," or vice versa. So tell me about the film first. In full disclosure, you're in it, so that is to its credit. But what is Dead Name, and why does it need to be seen?
Well, that's correct. And Dead Name is, the best way I can describe it, is an intimate portrait glimpse of families that have been ruptured when their children suddenly start identifying as something other than their sex, transgender, some other quote-unquote gender identity. And it really humanizes this struggle from the parent's point of view. Three families are profiled. Vimeo actually censored it earlier this week, but the filmmakers with Broken Hearted Films have found a new home for it on a website all of its own called deadnamedocumentary.com.
Very cool.
It is an extremely moving film, Mark, where I think some people are thinking that this transgender ideology is very harmful and damaging. But let me tell you, they have no idea just how terrible it is until it's their own family that has been ripped apart. Filmmaker Taylor Reese did an amazing job giving these parents a voice. I think the medical issues that we're seeing, I know you guys have dealt with it down in Texas with, you know, the James Younger case all of the legislation with Ken Paxton and all of that, calling this child abuse and all of that. Aside from the legislative issues and the medical issues that are just now starting to be scrutinized more broadly, the family suffering has only now, and I think with the advent of this film, begun to be discussed. And that's so important. We can't forget about the relational rupture that this causes.
I think I can discern this, but I want you to tell me, what does Dead Name refer to?
Well, Dead Name is sort of transgender-ese. That's a transgender-speak term, where that's the name that transgender-identified people call the birth name that your parents gave you. They say that name is now dead, and the name that they have chosen for themselves in the transgender identification project process is their real name. The filmmaker has explained to me, and I'll just say it here, that Dead Name is kind of an emblematic phrase for all of the struggles that parents face, this ideology just breeds death, and it turns things that we're living into dead. It just sort of ruptures and causes ruin wherever it goes, and it just represents their struggles in a whole new way. I really can't emphasize enough for people to go see it. It is behind a paywall, as you were saying earlier, but independent filmmakers are doing a very crucial service, particularly regarding this issue, because the mass media has not given these parents a voice.
Sure, it costs money to make movies. It's $9.99. So just as you mentioned, yeah. Go to deadnamedocumentary.com, deadnamedocumentary.com, $9.99, and it's an hour. So it's not a huge investment of time, but I can't think of anything more important. And I got to tell you, I'm sorry, you ran the name of the company by me, Broken Hearted Films.
Correct.
Yikes.
That is correct. Yes.
Yikes.
This film was made with a lot of love, and it's really a disgrace that Vimeo is calling this hate speech. It's as the filmmaker has said publicly in interviews that she's given, this is love speech. These are parents who love their kids more than their own lives, and they want the best for them.
Of course. And once again, I mean, one day it's Facebook, and one day it's YouTube that shuts down things they don't like. Vimeo, for those who don't know, is obviously a video hosting and dissemination service. So along comes the Dead Name documentary, and it was on Vimeo that when you wrote your initial review there at the Christian Post, it was on Vimeo. Is it still there or no?
It is not at Vimeo anymore. No, so it's
wow.
It was just poof, gone.
Okay,
with no warning. So, but with a sort of innovation, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, yeah. This was not expected. So we've got a new home for it, and so all is good. And I think there's been greater interest now because of Vimeo trying to censor it than even previously, so it's a blessing in disguise, I
that
guess.
That is exactly right, because what sometimes people don't get is if they stigmatize things, muzzle people, cancel things, it winds up biting them in the butt because it ends up getting attention that otherwise would not have received. So there at deadnamedocumentary.com, just taking a look at a little bit of the synopsis, we learn how shocking it is, it writes, for parents to hear that their children in their mid to late teens have seemingly out of nowhere decided to switch from female to male or male to female. In an other story, we follow one parent's nightmarish descent into the transgender world as her ex assigns a female gender to their very young son. In all of these stories, we find parents struggling with disbelief, loneliness, helplessness, isolation, and despair. Brandon Showalter's here from the Christian Post. Not to say none. Gender dysphoria is a dysfunction that has been part of the human condition, I'm guessing, forever. But if you go back 30, 40, 50, 60 years, you don't find a third of the kids identifying as maybe I'm something I'm not, as gender fluid or something. This is completely a modern social construct, is it not?
Well, it is very complex. There are some, to the extent that gender confusion or dysphoria exists, I believe, this is my personal view, that it is comorbid with other psychiatric ailments or mental health conditions. But what we're seeing today does not track with what has been historically known as gender dysphoria. I believe that a social contagion, fueled largely by internet and social media and friend groups and this kind of marketing that has been pummeled at our children through technology and other means, that is causing this massive sweeping up of children suddenly identifying as this insanity. Yeah. I would urge everyone to go watch the trailer just to get a taste of what we're talking about with this film too, because I think that'll really expose you to who these parents are. But it's got a very shocking beginning, and I won't give too much away, where with that last example that you read there, Mark, where they're following the nightmarish descent of that one parent. It's a 4-year-old boy dressed head to toe in pink, speaking knowledgeably about transgender surgery on the genitals. What 4-year-old child should ever know or be able to speak about something like that? It just shows you how many children have been corrupted in the kind of I'm sorry, there's no other way to say it, just vileness that has been pulled into their innocent mind.
There's
no way a child should know about any of it.
Of course not. And the only way this child or any child does is at the abusive hands of twisted parents.
Yes. Well, I th- and And the social media aspect of that too. That can't be. I mean, this is marketed. There are doctors. Well,
a four-year-old is not. I mean, I know.
Well, on 4 year old, yes. Yeah. I know on that. But on teenagers, they're all over social media, and doctors who want to do these surgeries are marketing to this them on TikTok.
Of course they are. And it's staggering. See if this tracks with you. It is. It has always been the journey from boyhood to manhood. Always been hard. The journey from girlhood to womanhood. It's hard. It's filled with obstacles. It's supposed to. That's the process. You get tougher. So now in the old days where your dad, God forbid, your dad or somebody would help you get from boyhood to manhood through the rough waters of that. And someone would help girls get from girlhood to womanhood. Now they bump up against the difficulty of being a boy or difficulty of being a girl. And they go, I'm out. Maybe it's just easier for me to be the other gender. That is epidemic.
Yes, well, and puberty is not a disease. I mean, it may be uncomfortable, but yep. To medicalize it away as though it's not a necessary process for all of us to go through. I mean, that's a medical scandal, Mark.
All right, you want to in our couple of remaining minutes, I want to borrow something else from what is apparently an area of your expertise. Brandon Showalter's here from Christian Post, and again, deadnamedocumentary.com for the film, deadnamedocumentary.com. You have also apparently done some writing and some thinking about euthanasia. Assisted suicide and stuff, correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's do a couple of minutes on that. It is mortifying to me. I do not believe that someone's life is his or her property. It is a gift from God, but we're not a theocracy. People can believe whatever they want. I am very fond of and listen, if somebody is laid out and virtually vegetative, that's a case we can talk about. But I remember the Dr. Kevorkian days where some woman would sit there at a kitchen table drinking a cup of coffee saying, I'm so glad I met Dr. Kevorkian. He's going to take me out like next Tuesday. What? So up against a world where it's like, hey, people could do whatever they want. We shouldn't interfere with people doing whatever they want. Maybe your life is your own property if you view it that way. What is the, I guess there's a moral argument, but if somebody wants to make it illegal, and not only is it legal, it's encouraged, one thinks, in a lot of Scandinavia. Where does that stand right now? I guess I think Oregon still lets you do things like this. How is the field striped, and what does the battle look like against the, not just the sin, but the horrible social path of euthanasia and assisted suicide?
Well, there's a scholar that I know that says that once death enters the driver's seat, and I'm paraphrasing him, once death enters the driver's seat, it never pushes the brakes, something like that. Some people like to give people like me a hard time about slippery slope fallacy or whatever, but you do find that once you open this door, there does seem to be no limiting principle, because who can really say, making all these determinations, well, you're sick enough, you qualify for euthanasia, and you don't. Well, I mean, it really is. I think, in just to give this some context worldwide, I believe it was in 2002 when Belgium first instituted their law to allow it. That was just, 20 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing 9 and 11-year-old children being euthanized in that part of the country. And so it really, the slippery slope is very real. But as a Christian, I certainly oppose it on moral grounds. But some of the most eloquent arguments that I have heard are from secular people. There's a group called Not Dead Yet, where they argue that euthanasia is quite literally a deadly form of discrimination against the aged, the infirm, the sick, the elderly. They're not dead yet, and
no.
They deserve our care. Let's explore palliative care options rather than just killing them off.
And if people are listening and saying, yeah, but nobody's doing it for anybody else. These are all decisions that people should make about their own lives. Well, yeah, in a vacuum. But as soon as somebody knows that this option is available to Uncle Fred, we are going to pressure the living daylights out of Uncle Fred to follow that option if we want him to.
Well, that's right. And I have Dutch friends who have told me that, because Dutch is right there, Belgium's neighbor, Western Europe seems to really pioneer this kind of thing.
Thanks.
And it's spread all over the world. But they're afraid of, is that your ancestry?
No. Thanks, Northern Europe. Yeah, exactly.
But they were saying, I've heard stories of, anecdotes that Dutch people are afraid to go into the hospital.
Yes.
If they're, because they're not, because of all the institutional pressures that arise from the legal code. Now there's well, you just kind of make this easier and just kill you off. I mean, there's, I mean, that's just anecdotal. That's not reporting from the front lines, but it doesn't surprise me to hear that, that you, once you sort of create this within the culture, all sorts of, you know, it emerges in all sorts of spaces and places. And, you know, there's sort of there's cost considerations. I've seen stuff in Canada in recent days where they're talking about how this will cut costs. I'm like, well, a human life, let's not talk about this in monetary terms, because some things are more precious than money.
So here are the realms, the many, many realms of the writing and the podcasting of Brandon Showalter. ChristianPost.com and ChristianPost on Twitter. Brandon's individual Twitter, if my memory serves, is Brandon M. Show, S-H-O-W, correct? Brandon M. Show, correct?
That is correct.
Look at there. I got it right.
Dead name, yeah.
Got it right. DeadNameDocumentary.com. DeadNameDocumentary.com for the film. Brandon, thank you. Let's talk again soon. Obviously, we share a lot of space, and I admire a whole lot of the work you're doing. It's really valuable, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much. God bless. That's Brandon Showalter, DeadNameDocumentary.com, 923. A little Studio Frampton there, kids. All I Want to Be is By Your Side. 866-660-5759. So coming up here in the next segment, we're going on out to California, where he's up a little early for us. It is Matt Rinaldi, who is the chairman of the Texas Republican Party. And we're going to talk about a couple of things. First of all, we have the big vote tomorrow. Where all 50 states plus District of Columbia plus how many territories do we have? Like five. And everybody sends three people, the state or whatever party chair, a committee man, a committee woman. How did we choose those? And top on the plate is the decision over who ought to be the chairwoman, and it will be a woman, of the Republican National Committee. It'll either be the continuing service of Ronna Romney McDaniel, who either is or is not to blame for the middling success of the midterms, or the challenge. And I love Harmeet Dillon, love her, but it's kind of like the backup quarterback. The grass is always greener on the other side. It's like, you know, let's go with the other person. So Matt Rinaldi, the Texas chair, is already throwing in for Harmeet Dillon, which is great. And if she wins, I think we'll be well served by her. How much company does he have? What other issues arise in a room? And this could to be a fly on the wall in there, an entire room full of people, of delegations from every state, thinking about the best future of the Republican Party. The man tasked with that in Texas is Matt Rinaldi, longtime friend of mine, longtime legislator, and now look at him, chairman of the state party. We'll talk to Matt out in California next, and to you thereafter. If there's anything remaining on your mind, 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, 930, Gordon Griffin in the newsroom. If he is kind enough to join us, we wanted to do Texas Republican Chair Matt Rinaldi a solid and have him on as late in the show as possible, because it's 9:37 here. Our day is underway, but out there in Orange County, man, 7:37. Oh, my gosh. We're extra appreciative. California is where the nation's attention and certainly our party's attention directs for tomorrow's vote. Finally, to see if RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel needs to remain or needs to be replaced by Harmeet Dillon, to discuss that and, I'm guessing a few other things, State Republican Party Chair Matt Rinaldi. Morning, sir. How are we doing?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So when did y'all get out there, and just what's the vibe like? Set the scene for us. Every state, the District of Columbia, and I guess five territories, all send three people. Where do y'all gather?
We're over here at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Orange County.
Sweet.
We've been here since Tuesday. There's right now a lot of campaigning among the 168 people who vote for chair and co-chair and all a bevy of other offices as well. But right now you have a lot of people as proxies campaigning for both Ronna McDaniel and Harmeet Dillon.
as everybody arrives, is the overall vibe that this is kind of wide open? Is it Ms. McDaniels to lose because she has had the title? Or is she damaged goods because the midterms didn't go so well and Harmeet's the favorite? Just, you know, what are the Vegas odds on this going into tomorrow?
I mean, the Vegas odds are that Rana has to be favored at this point. I mean, you have a very much an establishment insider group of people. Mm-hmm. however, this could go either way. It's not, she may be favored, but she doesn't have it yet. It's very close. It could go either way. It's a secret ballot. And she's pushing people hard for herself, obviously. And one of the things that has pushed people towards Rana is the grassroots are very much in favor of Mike Lindell or Harmeet Dhillon. I've received several thousand emails, not a single one's been for Rana McDaniel. However, behind the scenes, the Trump team is trying to push people towards Rana McDaniel.
Which is intriguing because you would, and the triangulations are always interesting in Republican land. You think Trump, you think grassroots, generally speaking. Yet here's Trump all in for Rana McDaniel, probably because of some longtime personal relationship. She's been pretty darn supportive of him. But the midterms sucked by any measure, and that creates angst, has a lot of people thinking, we need change, we need turnover. Now, I asked you, and you told me, and I've shared with the audience, you are all in for Harmeet. Tell me why.
Well, because, you know, at a very base level, if you're coaching a football team and you're expected to go 16-0, and you end up going 8-8, you fire the coach and you get a new coach. I mean, regardless of what happened. Here in the RNC, There are problems, and there are reasons why we went 8-8. One is the inability to adapt to particular states' election laws, where ballot harvesting is legal and the Democrats are taking advantage of it. Another is wasting of money. We see the RNC spending millions of dollars on private jets and doing hair and makeup and jewelry for gifts, I think was $20 million. There's a lot of waste and abuse in consultants and spending. and you see a bad messaging from the RNC. I mean, you can't, I think somebody called it sombrero diplomacy. You can't go into South Texas and just say, you know, we love Hispanics. You need to actually show how you are going to change people's lives. You can't play identity politics like the left does, right? You need to actually show how you change people's lives. And the RNC hadn't done that.
How do they play identity politics?
Just by emphasizing that when they reach out to groups, reach out by skin color, reach out by religion. We need to choose different identity groups. Our identity groups that we should put people into should be parents, people who want to be parents, people who are religious, people who care about safety, mm-hmm. people who are working class. Those should be our identity groups.
I think that makes sense. And yet, well, you know, all we've been swimming in for the last 20, 30 years is what a crappy job Republicans have done, reaching out to blacks and Hispanics. Are you telling me that that's a bad idea to specifically say, hey, Hispanic America, here's why Republicans are good for you. Here's why conservatism is good for you. Hey, African-American voters, maybe you've never seen a Republican, but we're going to make a point of coming out and pitching to you specifically. Are those bad ideas?
No, it's a good idea to talk to them, but it isn't good to delineate people based on race. We need to go into areas that might be 90% African-American or Hispanic and be there for people and talk to people from those groups. But we certainly shouldn't reinforce the left's definitions of people's social groups based on skin color.
Gotcha. All right. So this is funny. So here's how I approach this. I love Harmeet. Love her. Yeah. And if she wins, I'm prepared to think that's great. I'm trying to find the coach analogy is interesting. But I don't for one minute think the midterm sucked because of Rana McDaniel. I think it was 14 other things, and maybe she's one of them. Maybe she's part of them. The things that do resonate with what you're telling me is the adaptation to election laws. That would seem to be an RNC thing. Wasting of money, planes, and haircuts. That ain't why we lost. But that's bad optics. You'd like to have money spent wisely. Bad messaging. What better job might Ms. Dhillon do in terms of messaging as we work toward 24?
Well, I mean, first of all, she's going to spend money on messaging. I think a lot of what the RNC was doing was employing consultants and interest groups with all that money. I mean, so we do lose because the RNC is spending extra money. If you raise $20 million and you don't spend it to get it on the ground, you're squandering that money and you're losing votes. A lot of these races are within 1%. So I do disagree. I do think the RNC did lose some of those races.
Okay, good point. Every little
blame to go around.
Sure, no, indeed so. And then no single thing might be it. But if we find something we can improve on, then we should. Matt Rinaldi is here. He's the state GOP chair. Every state is sending its chair plus a committee man and committee woman, correct?
Yep, correct, as well as the territories.
Who are ours? I mean, I know you.
Ours are myself. Who'd you bring
with you? Mm-hmm.
Myself, Robin Armstrong, and Tony Ann DeShiel.
Gotcha. And who are those good folks?
That's our national committee man and national committee woman.
What a cool thing on the business card. I'm the national committee man. How does one get that gig?
We elect them at the state convention in June, mm-hmm. As well as the state chair.
Very cool. Have you had a chance to rub elbows with the commensurate delegations from a Nebraska, a Florida, a Washington state, et cetera, et cetera? And what have we learned anything? Have you had any interesting conversations?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty interesting because you're going to a host of different receptions for all the candidates last night, mm-hmm. and you do know that. You know, the Trump Save America team is making phone calls reportedly for Ronna McDaniel. Mm-hmm. But then you're at a reception for Harmeet Dillon. And at the reception is Mike Lindell, who's running against her, and Carrie Lake, who's a very pro-Trump person. And Harmeet herself is one of Trump's lawyers. So you have an interesting dynamic with who's supporting who.
You know, and I was because that's great because, you know, Harmeet loves Trump. You know, Ron has been supportive of Trump. Mike obviously loves Trump. And here's Trump throwing in with Ronna. I think with Trump, often it's about a personal relationship and a personal connection, which is fine. But by the way, he's entitled to that, and that's fine. But I think a lot of people who love Trump and voted for Trump might take a look at this and say, with all due respect to the former president, I think I might prefer Harmeet. And, you know, they don't want that doesn't mean anything the matter with Trump or his, you know, kind of like the occasional endorsement isn't something that necessarily everybody signs on to.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the case. And you have some undertones of the DeSantis versus Trump rivalry projecting in this race, too. But not really. I mean, I think it's both. Both candidates are very, very pro-Trump, pro-Ron DeSantis, and very pro-Republican. It's just dissatisfaction over how the finances were being handled and how the elections went.
So in a gathering filled with people who are active in the Republican Party, after everybody gathers at these receptions, you know, gets a couple of pops in them, do some good Trump and DeSantis debates break out, and how are those going?
No, it's mostly just quiet conversation and talking like you would normally with your friends about politics. There hadn't been any big debates about anything yet, certainly.
It obviously lies ahead, and the thing I want to get a take from you about is, because I already see this happening, I see some folks in Trump land. I think Roger Stone, God love him, is saying all the DeSantis people are just anti-Trump donors. And I feel one of the great lies and one of the great mythologies is that this is somehow a binary either or kind of thing. There is so much shared space, shared love, shared affection, shared agenda between Trump and DeSantis for so many people. It's God bless it. If find me 100 people in that room you're going to be in tomorrow who love DeSantis. They love Trump, too. They just feel like that maybe it's time to turn the page. And I think it's going to be there's going to be a narrative that's meant to put these guys at each other's throats.
Yeah, I think there is. I don't think it's working because I think everyone there loves Ron DeSantis. They love Trump and are appreciative for what he did in changing the party. And you could tell just by the RNC, which I said is a very establishment crew. It's changed. I mean, the Bush party is gone. The Trump party is here. The Ron DeSantis party is here.
Works
so
for me.
We did a lot of good
me.
The last 5 years.
You can say that again, and that has been a glorious thing to behold. So exactly when does this happen tomorrow?
It is in the general session, which I believe starts around 10 o'clock our time, so in the afternoon.
So by dinner time tomorrow, we probably have – or is this election going to take a month too? Sorry.
Hopefully by 3 o'clock, because I got to fly out of here.
Yeah, he's hey, I got a flight here. I got a flight. I got stuff to do back in Texas. Matt, thank you enormously. I deeply, deeply appreciate it. Thank you. The committee man, committee woman, we appreciate them as well. Say hi to everybody out there, and we'll see what the next battles are to fight. They are many, and we always look forward to welcoming you.
Will do. Thank you. Take care.
You betcha. That is Matt Rinaldi, chairman of the Texas Republican Party. All right, so the things that is the coach analogy. Let's go right to it. Is it Mike McCarthy's fault that Dak can't win big games? I don't know. Maybe that's what gets kind of nebulous here. It may not be his fault, but it's a coach's responsibility. It may not be Ronna McDaniel's. Some of these things may not be her fault. Maybe a couple of them are. But it's ultimately happened. You know, what's the old saying? It happened on her watch. You don't want something to happen on your watch. Oh, no. So maybe it's time for a new watchwoman. So I think that Matt laid it out pretty properly. I don't want to say it's Ronna McDaniel's race to lose. That would imply that it would be a kind of a shock if Harmeet won. I don't think so. I think a lot of it's going to come down to what does, and once again, as with everything else in life, what does a Trump endorsement mean? I think it means something, but to a lot of people who love Trump, if they think Harmeet's still the better choice, they're going to vote for it. So I don't know. At this point, I have no idea how this thing goes, and that makes it even more interesting. 9:50, Mark Davis, Exit Ramp next.
Lord, I'm one. Lord, I'm two. Lord, I'm three. Oh, Lord, I'm four. Lord, I'm 500 miles away from home.
At the end of the 1970s, when Roseanne Cash was working her way into early adulthood, her dad, Johnny, gave her a list of 100 basic songs you simply have to understand. And it wasn't like 100 country music songs. The premise was 100 American songs. In 2009... Roseanne released an album called The List with about a dozen of those songs reimagined by her, including The Greatness of 500 Miles, written around 1960, performed most famously in 1963 by Bobby Bear. But here's Johnny's girl Roseanne and 500 Miles to take us out. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland, on Twitter at producer Rhonda K, R-O-N-D-A capital K. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for technical guru skills, and Gordon for news excellence. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Enjoy this sunny, beautiful day, and I'll see you tomorrow. Wow, Friday already. Thanks, COVID. Mike Gallagher's next, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Mark Davis, have a good one.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.